The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliates of Fuel Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this week I will be talking to you for the extent and all of this show, although with a little help from Christopher Kavanagh, who I interviewed this week. Some of you who have been listening to the show will know who Christopher is. Christopher was jailed back in the 80s here in La Modelo for trying to smuggle cocaine out of Colombia. So in the last segment of the show, I'm going to play snippets from the interview because I'm currently working on an article for an international magazine about Christopher. But that will be today's show. It's largely about that because I couldn't get him on the show, but I'll talk more about that later. So we'll just start off with this introductory piece to the show, as always, and I talk a little bit about usually the madness of Colombia. And the madness of Colombia, I think we'll make that the section, the initial section to each show, the madness of Colombia. This last week, a bridge collapsed in downtown Bogota. It was 103rd Street with 11th Avenue. A bridge collapsed before it had even been opened because it was being tested out by a military. So they had the grunts, the forlorn hope, out there testing the strength of this pedestrianized bridge that's supposed to transport you over, from the Universidad Militar to the military base, and it collapsed. And, it's just another of those things. It really is the madness of Colombia. I mean, it drives you insane. And of course, there was no health and safety and no fire engines there. There were no ambulances on site. There was nothing on site that needed to be on site for a test of this kind. So that sort of infuriates you a little bit. And then, of course, we've got our procurador. I guess he's our attorney general, Alejandro Ordóñez. Now, for those of you who know a little bit about Colombia, you'll know that Alejandro Ordóñez is a divisive character. I think that's possibly the most correct and most polite way of putting his detail across. He's the most divisive. Anyway, he stood up and said something recently, which actually I agree with, which is unusual anyway, but he declared that there were 2,760 disappeared people unaccounted for, disappeared by the FARC. So the Fuerzas Armadas Revolucionarias de Colombia, so the FARC, who've been in peace negotiations, peace dialogues, better said, with the Colombian government in Havana, Cuba, since November 2012. Anyway, Ordóñez has said this has been rejected outright by the guerrilla, but who's to say that there aren't 2,760 people missing and unaccounted for who've been disappeared by the FARC guerrillas? Who says? I don't know. I can't tell you. I mean, that would take, it was like polls and investigations from every single department and every single town, and checking out the bureaucracy and the lack of bureaucracy in most of these towns. But of course, it's going to have to happen because, we're going to have a complete truth commission here where everything is spoken out. Now, I'm really strongly on the side of this. We can't just brush it under the carpet and say, right, we're starting again. 2015, peace signed, we're starting again. No, we can't. This needs to be addressed. And all of this needs to be addressed. So on the back of that, when we're thinking about the FARC, the talks began again on about this, I guess, February the 2nd or so, and they've been, talking about the victims and how to end the conflict and so on. But the most recent statement the FARC have given us is they've invited the Colombian who has won, the most recent Colombian winner of Miss Universe, that's Paulina Vega, I believe. She's from a young lady from Barranquilla. Anyway, the FARC have kindly invited her to come to the peace dialogues. Because that's what you want, is someone who talks about being inspired by long walks on the beach and being inspired by the Word of God, going out there to discuss geopolitics with a load of dinosaurs in Havana, Cuba. That's what we want, is it? For the peace dialogues? I don't even know what the FARC were thinking. Maybe this would bring more publicity to the campaign. Maybe it would be some way of them reaching out to a popular culture. I don't know. Or getting through to Donald Trump. Who knows? You know, I don't know. Anyway, that statement came out, and it's largely been ridiculed across the international press. Not so much here, because Miss Universe is a serious situation, but it's largely been ridiculed. You can see it in The Telegraph, The Guardian, everywhere else you can see it. And actually, someone mentioned on my Facebook page that it's a quite disrespectful to the victims of the conflict, you know, that someone of this nature should be brought out there, you know, someone who's not perhaps as serious as the people needed to be out there. Anyway, without further ado, we'll be taking a short break now, and we'll come back and continue on about what's going on in Colombia before then launching into a little bit about Christopher Kavanagh, the Irish drug smuggler. So, don't go away, this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. And we're back. This is Richard McCall on Colombia Calling, the Overseas Radio Network, here with Escape Artist in Bogota. Yes, it's me. You've got lovely me for the whole 45 minutes of this interview this week. I have got some interesting interviews lined up in the future. Hopefully some more people, you know, to do with startups, because that was a very popular show. I wanted to address a little bit Claire Austin, her interview from last week, which seemed to have a few people up in arms, you know, about how someone could leave Colombia and go back. And indeed on our Facebook page, that's Colombia Calling on Facebook, people were mentioning several things about, you know, it being just as dangerous in some parts of London and just as corrupt and so on and so forth. But I, you know, she's someone who decided to share her thoughts and share the situation. And then, of course, she's in an incredibly difficult situation. And as we are now going, you know, going to press, as they say, Claire will be jetting back off to the UK with her young son and without her husband. So, you know, you've got to think for her situation, the poor girl, you know, going off without her husband. So, you know, let's just send some good vibes out for Claire there. You know, she was good enough to come on the show. We don't need to be grossly, let's say, you know, aggressive towards her on this one. I mean, it's one person's opinion, and she's right. She's got a right to it. So, therefore, I would say, you know, I applaud her for taking the decision, making the decision, and taking this plunge to go back, because it's not easy. Going back is not easy either. You know, we go out, we leave the country as expats and so on, but going back can be difficult too. In my situation, with no family in the UK, it would be incredibly difficult to go back. You'd be starting from zero. So, well, Claire had only been here for 3.5 years. I say only, but 3.5 years is almost a diplomatic career in Colombia, no, 4 years. I do know that our ambassador is leaving in September. That's Lindsay Appleby Crosdale, or Crosdale Appleby. I forget his name. But for those of you who read the British press, you might remember him as the Twitter Twit, because it wasn't just one time, but on two occasions, his Venezuelan wife got hold of, I guess, his phone with the official British Embassy Twitter account on it, and she tweeted her support. It's her support, not the British Embassy support, but for Oscar Iván Zuluaga, so the rival to President Santos in the last election. So that was the first element, first problem. And then the next time, she tweeted a criticism of President Santos's plan to go and speak with President Maduro there in Venezuela. So you could suggest that she's probably anti-Chavista, anti-Maduro, but you're a diplomat's wife. Not only that, you are the ambassador's wife. You should know your limits. You should know your limits. Anyway, that has created a frosty situation between the ambassador and President Santos, and our ambassador, Lindsay, will be returning to the UK, I believe, in September, when we will get a new ambassador here in Colombia. On the other front, this month, February, is the big month for Colombian tourism. I'm saying not in terms of numbers, not in terms of cruise ships, not in terms of anything of that nature. It is the ANATO, there's some sort of acronym there, but it's a big tourism fair, we're in Corferia, so the big, the expansive conference centre out in the western part of the city. It's also about the coldest part of Bogota, I believe, because it's always freezing in these huge warehouse-type places. Anyway, there'll be, on the ground floor, there'll be stalls set out from every department in Colombia and internationally. International representations and representatives of different countries all pitching their wares. We'll have big stands from Aruba and other countries in the Caribbean trying to pitch to Colombians, get cheap flights and so on. And of course, Argentina, other countries like that. Guatemala, you'll get the UK, of course, and you know, places like the US and study in the USA. But it'll be hundreds of people there, all making a sale. Hundreds of people all trying to sell you your holiday. And that's fine. And of course, it's a huge issue for me, because not only do I attend and pick out holiday destinations, I'm also up there in what amounts to being speed dating for, you know, tourism operators. So with my little hotel, La Casa Amarilla in Mompós, I'll be up there in 20-minute meetings. I've got 19 organized now for one day. 20-minute meetings with various overseas travel agencies looking for different things to pitch to their clients in Colombia. For, you know, Colombia, what do you want? And of course, being Mompós, you know, I jump in as being an add-on to the coast or something more authentic. But I've got 19 meetings, and I've started pitching out at some Brazilian and Mexican firms. You know, German, French, we've got. UK, we've got. US, growing. But I think, you know, we should look at South-South. So, you know, South and North America in terms of Mexico, Brazil, and maybe Chile. So it's going to be really interesting, and we'll see. Of course, the department invited is, you know, the Department of Honor. So the state of honor for this year's ANATO fair is Bolívar. So there'll be a lot on Cartagena and a very little on Mompós, because even despite the fact that we run a hotel, we have not yet heard from anyone in Cartagena or in Bolívar about, you know, what's going on, or should we be presenting at this stand. But that's part of the Colombia issue, you know, that's part of how it goes. Now, I wrote an editorial in the city paper, that's the city paper Bogota. If you'll remember, some months ago, we interviewed Richard Emlyn, the owner, director, editor, everything of the city paper. But I wrote an editorial about tourism in Colombia, and you know, I'm going to share a bit about it here for those of you who haven't read it or aren't in Colombia, because it's just tough. It's really tough being in tourism here. You know, tourism in Colombia, this is what I wrote, tourism in Colombia has been up against arguably the most challenging duels possible. A long-running conflict coupled with the ills of the seemingly indelible stain of a reputation for kidnapping and cocaine. And then in recent years, a revalued peso to the dollar. I mean, we really have been under the cosh. So here it goes, I continue. For so long, our peso has hindered the cost of travel for both domestic and international tourists, that we have seen cheaper airline tickets to destinations such as Brazil and parts of the US than for the 75-minute flight with favorable winds from Bogota to Cartagena. So can we be permitted a brief respite to enjoy and harness this moment when our visitors feel that finally a trip to or within Colombia represents value for money? Taxes are needed to pay for the peace dialogues and the post-conflict. This is undeniable. But rather than taxing the industry that is most set to increase to within a pesito of its existence, and I am speaking on behalf of all small operators, small business owners, and those employing the most needy in isolated areas, perhaps taxes could be collected from those who are evading, rather than levying further clandestine charges upon us. That's my call. Economic success and lasting peace in Colombia will come about when there exists a cadre of healthy industries, including, yet not exclusive to, tourism, that are nurtured and in a position to provide gainful employment to thousands of people soon to be unemployed when they hand over their weapons and demobilize. So this is out to you, President Santos, if by any chance you might listen to it. I think probably you don't listen to Colombia Calling, but tourism is key, President Santos. And I know that you're going to be at the opening ceremony, and I know you'll be there. You will make your inveterate appearance at the opening ceremony, displaying the countenance of a man who has soiled his trousers with no one noticing. You'll show your concern, but overall it will be an expression of tremendous relief at having got away with it. We'll hear your impassioned narrative about the some 1,850 species of bird found in Colombia, and will listen intently to the posturing declarations that Colombia possesses two coastlines. We'll hang on to your every word, because that's our way. We'll be rapt, as if discovering for the first time the news that Medellin is indeed a city of innovation, and that eventual peace and a peace agreement will increase tourism, investment, and social change. It's about a Colombia of peace and a Colombia of economic growth. That's what you'll promise us. And we'll believe it, because we'll be wrapped up, because this is our moment. And then what? Well, I know, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? But talking of tourism, rather than just let you down. So let's think about our neighbouring country of Venezuela for the last year, for a few minutes now, because you know this has been on the topic of conversation for a long time. Venezuela is in the dumps. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And this last week, the news has come out of a shortage of something essential. Yet again, something essential in Venezuela. Now, for those of you who follow, you'll know that, you know, given the financial restrictions and the restraints on the getting the dollars out of the country and exchange rate and so on, and the, you know, childish economics there, I can read you a long list of things, you know, not available anymore in Venezuela or in shortage. I mean, animal feed, batteries, beef, birth control pills, condoms, condensed milk, detergents, deodorant, eggs, insecticide, jams, lentils, margarine, milk, mustard, napkins, newsprint, oatmeal, pasta, peas, pork, razors, soap, toothpaste. I mean, it just sounds awful, Venezuela at the moment. Absolutely awful. I mean, if you think of in 2014, there was an emergency loan of paper from Colombia to three Venezuela daily newspapers because they had no more paper. Toyota in 2014 stopped their assembly operations. So we got, you know, everything. Even McDonald's, you know, is out, you know, doesn't have enough to create French fries there. Canned sardines, diapers, that's nappies to you and I out there, English people. So I levied out, I put out there a competition up on our Facebook page. I tweeted it out as well. It's the hashtag name the Venezuelan condom, because as you heard earlier, condoms were the one thing named last week that Venezuela now has a shortage of. So hashtag name the Venezuelan condom. Who can come up with the best name? Because Maduro, President Maduro, has come forward to say that the Venezuelan state will now create condoms for the people. So it's a kind of a Bolivarian condom. Anyway, so I, you know, emailed this out to a few people to get their thoughts. We've got Heather Luna saying, you know, because the idea was, what is the best name? We've got Nova from Heather Luna. Heather Luna, thank you very much. We've got El Gran Libertador, that was mine. We've got Mark Kennedy from the Bogota Post saying Chavi Duros. Yes, okay, for the pleasure of the people, I guess. Erin Donaldson said Contra Bebe, which is quite formal. Colin Post from the Expat Chronicle said Bolivergas, which is, you know, the vulgar nature of verga. So Bolivergas. Mark Kennedy came back in again and says, I can't read it, but anyway. Carolina Castro, anti-Chavez, because it stops the little Chavistas being born. Alba Torres said, Condones Bolivarianos. Adrian Anselmo of the of Columbia Reports there in Medellin, of course, came out of left field and decided that it would be better to promote abstention as the best form of prevention, and have women's panties, but with the face of Hugo Chavez on them in a suggestive area, and that would, of course, would then, yes, promote abstention. Chris Bell, who lived in Venezuela, said Angel Balls. Ah, nice one, play on Angel Falls. I quite like that one. Mark Firth, here in Colombia, in Bogota, said there has to be some way of getting an influence through the trickle-down nature of their Bolivarian revolution. Mariana Bernal, she just said, you know, well, it's got to be a play on something. The verga, what was the telephone? The verga tolio, the verga, what was it called? I can't even remember there at that ridiculous telephone that they had. I think it was the verga torio. Verga torio was the phone, and of course that's a bad name. So she just said para cuidar el pajarito. Of course, that's a play on Maduro having seen or listened to Chavez as a little pajarito one day. Who else have we got on here? Well, that's about it for now. But I'm hoping that this will build up so we can keep, you know, a good hashtag, name the Venezuelan condom, keep going. So we'll see. And I think to the point now, the winner so far has been from Ian McKinley. Ian McKinley, you'll remember, is the author of The Gallows Gem. You know, he's here in Bogota, Canadian, from Lethbridge, Alberta. Ian McKinley wrote Más Duro, which I think is the perfect play on words through Maduro, and of course Duro and Más. I think Más Duro is the winner. So what you win, Ian, is great praise here on Columbia Calling, because of course there was no, I mean, apart from, you know, just flattering you immensely, there was no prize. But keep thinking up these things, because why not? Why shouldn't we have some fun at their expense? And why shouldn't we have some fun at this situation? It is pretty terrible there in Venezuela, and, you know, as a neighbouring country, we weep for them. And I'm sure that I wonder how they'll be represented at the tourism fair here in Colombia. Will we get the usual chavistas, or will we get people trying to get out again? It'll be interesting. As always, I like to hear from all of you out there. Please write to us at columbiacalling@gmail.com, Twitter @columbiacalling, Facebook columbiacalling. And of course, you can see my own personal blog, that's richardmccall.com. Usually I write more untoward things out there. And speaking of untoward things, things or people, we'll be talking to Christopher Kavanagh. Well, I talked to Christopher Kavanagh, and I will be playing a few snippets of his interview. That was about 3.5 hours of interview. It was very beery. I'll be playing them now in the next section of the show, the final section, because I am actually working on an article for an international magazine about Christopher Kavanagh, so I don't really want to let on too much, but I'm just going to play a couple of snippets here and there and sort of interject and jump in and explain what's going on and so on. But anyway, so don't go away. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back. This is Columbia Calling, and I'm Richard McCall. Thank you for listening. And this is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and I'm here in Bogota. And I think this is probably the section of the show you've all been waiting for, this last section of the show. We've got 25 minutes remaining. And yes, I'm going to play snippets of my interview, my three and a half hour long interview with Christopher Kavanagh, who's an Irishman who's been here since the 80s. Let's say I can remember exactly the date because I've got it written down, although my writing gets worse and worse through the interview because I'm basically getting drunk. I sat down, I met Christopher. Well, I called him up, you know, I'm waiting for Chris in this little town, this little cafe on a corner near to where I live in Chapinero called El Merenguito, El Merengazo, you know, a really traditional old place, formica, fake wooden walls and fake wooden chairs and stuff. But, you know, old Bogota, the sort of place where beers are still very cheap and you know, little people come in to have their picada and watch the game. But anyways, but I went in and I sort of had a coffee. And of course, it's old Bogota. It's bad coffee. You know, it's bad coffee. It's coffee from when all of the best coffee used to be exported. And so it's like it's burnt coffee offering. You know, it's old school. It's what I didn't want. But I was kind of, okay, I mean, I would have preferred to have downed more coffee than the amount of beers that were imbibed in the 3.5 hours. I mean, I footed the bill, and it only came, I mean, it didn't come to too much because it was a cheap place. But my first error in this interview, of course, was to allow Christopher to be sitting facing, let's say, the attendant, the waitress, the bar. Because as soon as he finished, which was incredibly fast, I don't think even three gulps before a bottle of beer was down, he would then just order two more. So leaving me in his wake, but having to catch up and match him drink for drink. And there were more than 18 empty bottles on that table when I left 3.5 hours later. I mean, you know, so, and this is someone I had not known before. So I was a little bit nervous because it's always been someone who I've been keeping at a distance because I see him, I know about him, I know his reputation. And it's, you know, it's not someone, while I want to be friends, he's not someone I want, you know, sort of dropping in by the by to play backgammon with me, as I know that he does to other people in the sort of expat community in this region, you know, just sort of turns up. I kind of promised him a Sunday lunch, but we'll see how that happens anyway. So you've got to imagine that we're in this incredibly old school cafe, you know, there's the old sort of old Carlos Gardel black and whites, and the black and whites of Bogota when there was a lovely tram. I've called him up on a couple of occasions to ensure that he's coming. I've called him up trying to find out where he is. I don't think he understands cell phones particularly or recognizes numbers, because I guess the only one that the person that calls him at the moment perhaps is his girlfriend, because as soon as I called the first time, it was, "All right, my love, the love of my life, who are you?" I was like, "Well, you know, this is Richard McColl, blah, blah, blah." And finally, you know, I think it clicked. And of course, you've got to get him at the right time of day so that he hasn't been drinking or he's not hungover or whatever. You know, this is something you have to think of. Anyway, so Christopher Carana is, as you can imagine, a character. I mean, a character is the least of the issues. I mean, okay, so listen. He was jailed in 1986 here in Bogota, Colombia. He was held in La Picota, one of the most notorious prisons here in Bogota and in Colombia, possibly in South America. He was trying to smuggle out cocaine. He was sort of a petty, small-time gangster in Dublin. You know, the conversation that we have is more of a conversation of getting to know one another. You know, you're sort of putting out the feelers, you know, see who this person is. And I guess he's seeing who I am. His voice is gravelly, it's spent. There's a fatigue in his face. At one point, he shows me his fingers because he's practicing, you know, playing the guitar, and they're completely worn down. This man has an addictive personality. Everything he does to excess. Anyway, so we're there, and in there, there's sort of natterings about the IRA. I'm thinking we're going to spend an hour because it's going to be busy. How wrong I am. And as we're sitting there, in the opening sort of, let's say, the opening salvo of conversation, a lottery salesman comes in and stops the interview and just says hello to Chris. And Hammy's saying, everybody in the barrio knows him. Absolutely everyone. Because he's been a feature here since whenever he got out of jail. You know, I guess it was in like 1990 or so. Or 1988 or something along those lines. You'll have to check out Colin Post's book. Now, we did an interview with Colin months and months ago to help him with his Kickstarter campaign. His Kickstarter campaign was to get the book published. Now, the book is published. It's out there. It's on Amazon. You can find it as Mad Out of Me Head, Addiction and Underworld from Ireland to Colombia. And it's a story. It's a gangster story about Chris the Mick Kavanagh. And, you know, he's got 7 reviews on Amazon. I'm looking at it. And we've got one saying, amazing read. Chris the Mick Kavanagh went off the rails like few men have ever done and somehow lived to tell about it. This book starts with Chris's ascent as a minor player in the Dublin drug scene to his arrest in Colombia for drug smuggling. Chris finds himself exiled without a passport in Colombia, where he still teaches English today. And there's another one, someone, Buff Driver. A good read, organized and well written, lots of entertaining anecdotes. Then we've got someone, Matt Aaron, from the streets of Dublin IRA to the crooks and junkies of Bogota, a fascinating tale of an Irishman immersed in the underworld. Here's another one here, for an unbridled romp through the contemporary Colombian history and using Christopher Kavanagh as the spine of this unbelievable tale, look no further. Drugs, murder, prostitution, and all seen through the eyes of the affable and otherworldly Irishman. This is unlike anything you will have read before. What else have we got? And they go on. You know, some people can load them up, but they go on. These reviews seem legit. Anyway, so you can check it out. Just put in Colin Post into Amazon. He's the author of the Expat Chronicles. And that's expatchronicles.com. The book costs $9.99 on Amazon. Mad Out of Me Head, Addiction and Underworld from Ireland to Colombia. Anyway, but before, you know, so I don't plug this anymore, I'll tell you about this time. I was a little bit wary of meeting Chris. I'd always sort of turned down the opportunity. Colin had, Colin Post had sort of given me the numbers, like, he's waiting for your call, you've written about him, etc. And I know, you know, being a journalist, I should probably have got more quotes from the source, but he's just such otherworldly character. And we're sitting there, and he's talking about Oscar Wilde and the Ballad of Reading Jail. He's talking to Guy de Maupassant when this lottery salesman comes in. It's all very surreal. His warmed-down fingers. He wants to talk. He just wants to chat, in truth. The way we were talking, all he wants to do is chat. You can tell he misses just this kind of chat. And so it was fun. But I'm just going to play this first excerpt when we were first meeting, so you can hear it a little bit. I mean, it's being played off a recorder, so it's not going to be great sound, but just so you know, it's there. Here we go.
You are a famous character, personality, as they say here. Everybody knows you. They all know me.
Yeah, everybody knows who you are. Might not be the most spoken to, but everybody knows who you are.
Oh, yeah. I see the fortune looking for
you. It's like, who's this guy with the big Irish afro?
Sure.
It almost sounds like it's like, you're going to get up a river dance for me now. It's like, yes.
I just bought my sister.
Oh, yeah? Back in Ireland.
Yeah. And it's never because she's probably always done it.
Anyway, so that's a little idea for you, as you know, so you can hear the Irish twang. He's not lost it at all. So part of what I was interested in exploring here with Christopher is, of course, perhaps his a melancholy. Maybe he regrets what he's done, and maybe he regrets not being able to go back to Ireland. It was interesting because, you know, he suggested, because I put the word into his mouth, in truth, but he suggested, he got it out of his system, he suggested it was an exorcism of, of Ireland, of his past. He got it out of his system. I said, well, what about a good old Guinness or a Murphy's and a banter in the pub? He's like, no, that's gone, that's behind him. So, very curious to hear that, and as I look through my notes, I can just see my scrawl becoming less and less legible. So God forbid how I write this article on this next week. But anyway, so we talk a little bit about his start, his beginning in the underworld, let's say, in Dublin back in the 80s. And he was a BMW engineer, like technician. He claims to have been educated and so on. His name, though, in the underworld was Christo Hash, because he always dealt in hash. That was his thing. He would pick up the goods in Amsterdam and bring them over, sell them in Dublin. But of course, then he gets into heroin over the ways, and there's all these sort of littered conversations about gangsters with appropriately gangster names. Fat John, who he robbed him of 440 grams of heroin, which at that time cost £2,000. He talks of chasing the dragon and stuff. But as we're talking, there's a melancholy. He's looking out the window, this far away look, and it starts to rain, as is the want here in Bogota. But it starts to rain. He's like, I love the rain in Bogota, and I can't help think that this is, it makes him think of home, makes him remember. And of course, as you heard in the final section of that snippet that I played, it's like, I was talking to my sister, and my sister was coming out with all of these Irish sort of Dublin turns of phrase, and I used it. Well, of course. So we start talking a little bit about gangsters, and he's talking about Tony Filoni, who I believe was a very big gangster in Ireland at that time. It was only the lonely Tony Filoni who seemed to be also his girlfriend's lover as well. Now, his girlfriend went back to Ireland. She got back because she was pregnant. And I think Christopher got her off the hook, because she was going to be smuggling the cocaine with him as well. And she was pregnant with his child. Now, I asked him after that. He's got two daughters in Colombia, and I believe two children in Ireland. So we'll see. He said that. He said he's got. And I asked him about his Colombian daughters. One of them is a singer who's on tour in Mexico and Brazil. Another one's a hairdresser, and I went, well, have they taken your name? And his actual quote was, Tarzan had more surnames than me, because he's got no papers. His passport's been taken, he's got no papers. He lives in this legal limbo here in Colombia, and he lives in a barrio, up the hill, a poor barrio, where he's referred to as El Cardenal, the cardinal, because he forgives. I love that. I love that sort of that sort of anecdote, because he forgives the people that rob him, or he forgives those about him. But you can imagine, the beer is flowing, and we're getting to know one another. And so I'm asking him about this nostalgia for Ireland. Don't you? How do you feel about this? And he just says, "I don't know how I feel," he says. But then we talk about how he dreams about teapots. And he dreams about good tea. So this is the nostalgia. While he doesn't admit to it, there is, of course, a nostalgia. He almost obsesses about it. So very interesting to be talking to this guy, and very interesting to be thinking about what he's up to. And he continues to teach English here. I mean, that's the other thing. He's teaching English, and he's just the most qualified English teacher, perhaps, in Colombia, because he's been here since the 80s teaching English. I'm just looking for the next snippet that explains that a little bit. There we go. And so we're coming in. So you'll get to hear Christopher again. I hope the sound is good enough to, you know, give you a little bit of an idea of Christopher.
And you've been doing that since the 80s.
Yeah, really? I mean, it's 3 or 4 of that.
I hate teaching.
Yeah. I've got no interest in teaching.
So you're like chatting away,
yeah,
just chatting.
Fucking and then, well, it was enough better than fucking got to prison in Ireland or fucking flu, whatever, you did that mule.
But that's how you got caught.
Yeah.
But the girlfriend got back.
But she was in prison.
Yeah.
I just want to read about Tony Filoni. She was a friend of Tony Filoni.
Your girlfriend was as well.
Yeah, okay. My damn girlfriend was a fucking proper bitch. And every sense of the word.
Okay.
Oh,
I'm sure she's got some lovely things to say about you too.
No, but we got on together really well. And,
yeah.
And I'm sure the killer, you know. Fucking no fucking brains about you. Didn't give a fuck about anybody. She's a fucking wife virgin. You know? I'm the same line that I thought it was on you for that. But it wasn't. Because I was kind of an educated feminist, you know what I mean?
So you're a poet, not a warrior.
You know what I mean?
What you're talking about, the Oscar Wilde and the Ballad of Reading Jail, though, you know what I mean?
So, it's a strange fucking, it's a strange mix, because I'm a BMW mechanic,
yeah?
You know, I worked in BMW in Ireland, and then I did the 5 years, I'm a fucking proper whatever. What was fucking prohibited?
Yeah.
I wanted to put more than one when I couldn't or whatever. Stuff that wasn't acceptable.
You had, let's say you had disposable money, and so you wanted to spend it.
I just wanted to be against the rules.
I can understand that.
Just against the rules, not fucking against you, just against the rules.
Yeah, you understand that. Well, I'm not taking that personally. So you're just, yeah, a non-conformist. Just against the rules, just enjoying yourself.
So anyway, you heard a little bit there about Chris, and you can hear his gravelly voice, and you can hear his colourful, if limited, vocabulary, let's say. His vernacular is a little blue, and of course I'm glad that we're speaking in English and not in Spanish, because, to some people it would have been quite offensive, and if to any of you out there a little upset with that, but that's, you know, you're talking to a former con. He was just about to launch into something else, and he comes up and he says, you know, that he's learned really recently that he should have been left-handed. He should have been left-handed, but in, you know, back in the 70s or whenever it was he grew up, or 60s, you know, this was not allowed back at school. You had to write with your right hand, and you couldn't be left-handed. Of course, you know, his master part of the brain is the left side of the brain, but he was made to write with his right side of the right hand, and that, of course, he says in his words, that screwed him up. In fact, his words were more colourful. But, that really sort of put him out of joint. Now, I said, well, yes, I was too. I was made to sit on my hand at primary school, in my left hand, and not pick up the pencil with my left hand, so I would write with my right hand, etc. And he's like, oh, you too? And I'm like, yeah, maybe that made me a rebel. Maybe I'm a bit of a nonconformist, but I don't. I mean, you know, you've got to be pretty extreme for you to blame your whole, let's say, lifestyle on the fact that you weren't allowed to write with your left hand. Anyway, but he keeps coming back to this. This is something that is always being referred to in our 3 hours. And I think as the beer flows even more smoothly, and we're several beers in now, he starts to get more animated about this issue. But I find it hard to believe. I find that hard to believe that can be the excuse for everything. He just wanted to be a nonconformist. He wanted to be a rebel. And that's fine. But at what expense, you know, what has suffered from this? And of course, you know, he is very careful not to mention what his brothers do. I think he's one of four back there in Ireland. He's very careful not to get them involved in any of this. And I said, you know, what about your daughter back there in Ireland? What about your family? Wouldn't you be interested? He says, you know, he's not. It's interesting enough, he's not. So it's curious. It's kind of just like a life lost here in Bogota, because what, you know, apart from teaching English, kind of what purpose is he living? And that's what I want to explore in the article when I'm writing it for this publication later on. I just want to explore this, you know, rather than the, and this is what Christopher came across to me as well. He got a little bit upset, and I, you know, with no disrespect to Colin Post, who I consider a friend and who I've interviewed and I had here on Columbia Calling, he considered it just a little bit, it was too gangster-like. The book, it was too much emphasis on the killing, the gangster, the drugs. He wanted it to be the jovial Irishman, you know, this guy sort of falls on his ass but falls upright and makes something of it. That's what he wanted. But it's tough to be able to do that, because of course we think that it would sell better if we're selling a scandal, and of course it should sell better. This book should be out there as a cautionary tale and as, you know, some sort of element to life in Bogota, life as a sort of vagrant, almost a vagabond, someone who's been lost, fallen through the cracks of society, of common society, ordinary society. So I'm just going to try and find another clip now of the Mick, or Christopher Kavanagh, talking about this. Give me a second.
I know all four of these people, so you want to know?
Anyway, no, that wasn't a clip of that, but he came on quite strong about this and his opinions of the way the book was written and the opinions of, you know, he wants to be the cheeky chappy, but of course you have to focus on the gangster side. You have to talk about the drugs and his time in La Picota. I think that last clip that I had saved there, of course, was just to show, you know, the sort of Irish charm that he was. We were each beer that came was slancha, you know, he was happy. And he did say at one point during the interview, you know, he hadn't had a conversation of this nature for a very long time. You know, good chat about the past, the present, and what's going on about life and so on. So, you know, I felt a little bit, you know, bad for feeling so standoffish towards him. And I, you know, I've seen him running up and down the Quebrada de la Vieja of a Saturday when he's, you know, getting his exercise. I've seen him running down singing the Beatles song, Here Comes the Sun. I mean, he's a madman. But he's a jovial madman, and now he knows who I am, so I'm going to have to be more cautious around him. Anyway, so we were talking to Christopher Kavanagh about this, and it's just a very interesting story. I reckon that most of you will have heard, I mean, if you know anything about Bogota, you will have heard things about Christopher Kavanagh in the past. And indeed, he is mentioned in the seminal book, The Fruit Palace, by Charles Nichols, which is about the sort of the drug deals in Santa Marta, and you know, he meets this sort of Gaelic Charles Nichols talks about this sort of Gaelic person on the periphery of society in Colombia. It has to be Christopher Kavanagh. Of course, Charles Nichols' book is highly recommended. You can find that. And of course, he does get caught trying to pose as a drug buyer to transfer it back to England. So the journalist, it's glib at parts, but it's a very good, very enlightened book, a very interesting book. So you should be reading that about it. But I reckon if you wanted to get deeper into this, let's say that the dirt of Bogota, this mad out of me head is the way to do it. Now, I will be writing an article about this in the future. I will be publishing it on the website so that you can all read it. But I'd love to hear what you think about this guy who's sort of, as I said, he's fallen through the cracks of ordinary society. He's, you know, he's a Ronin, he's a wanderer without a home, really. He moves from place to place, I think living with various girlfriends, whoever puts up with him for a while, and then he moves on. He teaches English. You can see him wandering around Chapinero in sandals with an umbrella at all times, big Irish afro. Again, affable guy, but as soon as you get started on the beers, believe you me, he will drink you under the table, as you would expect. This gentleman knows how to drink, but he also knows how to be charming. So I can understand his point that he wanted a bit more of the cheeky chappy, a bit more of the Irish brogue, a bit more of the Irish charm to come across in the book, Mad Out of My Head. But, you know, you've got to take what's coming, and you've got to take what your author, what your writer is going to do. That's what he was doing. Anyway, so we're going to wind up the show now, and I hope you've enjoyed it. So please get in touch. Tell us what you think about this. If you've got any information about Christopher Cavanaugh that you wish to share with me that might help for my interview and for my article, please get in touch. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com. We've got the website, www.columbiacallingradio.com. Check out my blog site, richardmccall.com, and we're on Twitter at Casa Maria and at Columbia Calling. This has been interesting for me to take the whole show myself, but I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope I've been informative and informed, as I ask of all of my guests on the show. Next week, I think we'll be having the editor and the owner of the Bogota Post on the show, and we'll be talking all about that. And then after that, I've got a couple of more people in the pipeline, hopefully some environmental stuff, and perhaps some stuff about startups again, because that was very popular and well received. But anyway, if you think of anyone who wants to be or needs to be highlighted here and interviewed, please let me know. You've heard the email addresses. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com. Let me know, because it's always interesting to hear from new people and find out more about what's going on here in Colombia. Thank you for listening. I've been Richard McCall. This has been Columbia Calling.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.